The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Once upon a time in Radioland, a towering man strode to a silver microphone and announced to the world these words.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am that announcer, and my name is Todd Wilkerson. And this is the show I announce.
I'm announcing it right now, in fact.
And you have a front row seat to history.
Here's Eric.
Folks, talking to Jim Caviezel. Jim, you said you had been raised a Catholic. You're making some important theological points. Please continue.
I'm just saying, the face of Jesus in that movie were all the people that lived Jesus in their lives that were so authentic. They broke my heart. And they didn't, it wasn't necessarily that they were all Catholic, because many of them weren't. They were of different, the head of Young Life, who had a big part of my young of life, who brought me into the church and got me on my knee, put his hands over me, and the entire whole Young Life at the University of Washington, and they prayed over me, and he never did it again. He just did it that one time, and then he just passed away. That man was a part of my experience of who God was. You know, Frank Stewart, my lawyer of 30 years, and people in this business that know who that man was, that man's a saint. He lived a certain way in his life that made me want to be a different man. Look, I used to go into strip joints, okay? And there was a part where I broke God's heart so bad. I finally was walking in, and one of the guys is still alive today will testify to this. And I said, no, I'm not going in there anymore. I'm done. I can't do it. And I heard that saying by St. Augustine, I cannot rest, O Lord, until I rest in thee. You know, it's the truth. So that vehicle, I'm like a temple, right, for the Holy Spirit, they say in the scripture. And when he asked me to come and play, you know, him in the film, the first thing was, I'm the wrong guy. I'm the wrong guy for this. But if you believe in me, because I don't believe in myself that I can do this, but if you believe that I can do it, I believe I can because you believe in me. And that's really all that is. But I, just like the lady at the well, you know, go and sin no more. Change your life. Instead of this sentimental hogwash where you sleep with Susie on Friday, Catherine on Saturday, sleep with your best friend's wife on Sunday, and the blood washes all. And so in this film, we don't do that. We speak the truth. We show what that is really about. But can you live with the lie? Yes, they can torture you. They can do all these things. Do you want to live in that lie? I can't. I know that this is not my heaven. I know that I'm going to face God someday. And there's a judgment. And I hope and pray that I just get a big hug from him and we go in. That's it.
It just means so much to me that you'd share your heart with us. We're going to have to edit out the word hogwash. It's a family program and a lot of people are offended by that. I also want to let you know, Jim, that I am, you know, ostensibly an evangelical, but no laughing. You got to stay in character, brother. I'm ostensibly an evangelical, but the point is, either you're a Christian or you're not, right? And so all I meant to say was, as a non-Catholic who's pro-Catholic, I sometimes see that certain people get that dark side and it gives more power. And in Mel's Passion, he got that in a way that I have never seen in a film about Jesus, which is why it was so powerful, because he had the confidence as a you know, an old hand in Hollywood, even at that point, to go there. And it made it so powerful. I'm really so sorry we're out of time, Jim. I'd love to talk to you more, and perhaps we will soon.
I just want to close just one thing. Infidel is you are going to be persecuted some way or another, whether it be white martyrdom or red martyrdom, for your faith in Jesus. But if you live your life a certain way, that you can suffer that, right? That's why I look at Jesus on the cross. There were many, many people on the cross. Jesus on the cross specifically knows that I'm going to die someday. I know that. We're all going to die. And I'm going to look young, relatively. I'm okay right now, but I used to be prettier. That's me trying to make a joke. But I know people look at me, I'm a really serious guy, but actually I'm really funny. But anyway, Jesus is there. I'm going to die someday. I'm going to be alone, but I'm not going to be alone.
Amen.
Because he's right here.
Amen.
That really is the message of the Passion. That's a message about this film to inspire you that despite those, what they speak against you, and they will, but they hate Jesus. That is what they really hate. And that goes right from Genesis. I will put enmity between the woman's seed and his. And this is a fight between the good versus evil, the good children in the light and those that love the darkness. And really, as my friend said, it's a fight over the middle third. You can be a part of that, because every soul you save, our Lord, this world, they forget you in a heartbeat. Let me leave you with this. Your name may not appear down here in this world's Hall of Fame. In fact, you may be so unknown that no one knows your name. The Oscars and the praise of men may never come your way. But don't forget, God has rewards that he'll hand out someday. This crowd on earth, they will soon forget when you're not at the top. They will cheer like mad until you fall, and then their praise will stop. Not God. He never does forget. And in his Hall of Fame, by just believing on his son, forever there's your name. I tell you, friend, I wouldn't trade my name, however small, that's written there beyond the stars in that celestial hall for all the famous names on earth or the glory that they share. I'd rather be an unknown here and have my name up there.
Now, I've got to ask you, we've just got a couple of minutes left in this 10. Do you, where did that come from? Because I have literally never heard that before. I'm a fan of poetry. What is that?
That came from a man named John Wooden. He was my dad's coach at UCLA.
John Wooden wrote that?
Yes, he wrote it. And then he listed it as unknown. And he was at my house, and I was very familiar with that poem. And the way Coach would write poetry, and it had something that he would have written. So I was sitting there talking to him, and we were talking about poetry and different things, and I broke into that. And then he finished it, and I said, "You wrote that." And he had the biggest smile on. He gave me another version, several other versions of what he was put out. But John Wooden.
Does anybody in the world know that John Wooden wrote poetry? I have never heard this before. This is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. He was very, very close to me, my wife, and Frank Stewart. And he was my pyramid before I was even a part of it. And he talked about the two parts, cornerstone of the pyramid. That's a structure that's survived over times. And it was industriousness, work ethic. And the other cornerstone that never changed was enthusiasm, which means God within.
This is so extraordinary. I'm so grateful to get this time with you, Jim. You know, you're a powerful voice beyond being an actor, as you know, and God is using you. The film we've been trying to plug here is called Infidel, directed by Cyrus Noriste. Is that how we say it?
Noriste.
Noriste. I've met Cyrus and The Stoning of Soraya M. I mean, my goodness. These are important films. The good news is that this one is also a thriller, which I think a lot of people will see purely for the entertainment value, and then they will get monstrously blessed by the message. I'd love to continue talking to you. I'm afraid we're out of time, but it seems that we've got much more to talk about with regard to Hollywood, what's going on in America right now. And we'll try to do that and to continue promoting this film, which I hope will be around for many weeks. Jim Caviezel, God bless you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. God bless you too.
Folks, welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. As promised, we get the big guys here. We have Bill O'Reilly. If he needs an introduction, we're not going to give it. We want you to, you can look him up. We are just so thrilled, Bill O'Reilly, to have you back on the program and thrilled that you continue to write these extraordinary history books. I want to ask you about current events, but before I do that, I just have to ask you the big question. Why do you write these historical books? In other words, were you a student of history as a kid and you just said, someday I want to tell these stories? Or what is it behind them? The new one, by the way, folks, is called Killing Crazy Horse, The Merciless Indian Wars in America by Bill O'Reilly. So, Bill, what about that?
Well, I'm a former history teacher, high school history teacher. I did that in Miami, and I have a degree in history. I've always loved it. And I've always been frustrated because many of the teachers are boring. And so I decided when I was working at Fox News to expand my franchise into the history books. So the first one was Killing Lincoln. This one, Killing Crazy Horse, is the ninth killing book. And it is the most successful nonfiction book series of all time, Eric. And I'm stunned, but I'm pleased. Because if you read the killing books, you'll know the truth about your country. And I think you and I have something in common, that we're fed up with the propagandizing of America's history, that we're an evil nation, and that all of us are bad, and all of this nonsense and this garbage. I tell the truth. And Killing Crazy Horse is about the expansion of the United States from New York to L.A. How did that happen? They don't teach it in school. And if you read Killing Crazy Horse, you'll know it, and you'll know the truth about your country.
Now, most people, I mean, the narrative, even among conservatives, I think, would be that there are many truly lamentable moments in our westward expansion. And I assume that you get into that to some extent.
Of course. We tell the truth. We always tell the truth about everybody. When the United States decided to have a sea to shining sea policy under President Monroe, all the politicians in Washington knew that there was going to be conflict with the Native American tribes who inhabited the West, because it started in 1813 in Florida with the rise up of the Creek Nation and the massacre at Fort Mims in South Alabama, where Andrew Jackson was called down from Tennessee to confront the Creeks and defeat them, which he did. And then there were skirmishes and all across the eastern part of the United States. But there was a law, Eric, that said no white people can live west of the Mississippi. Congress signed it. But then as the millions and millions of people came from Europe, and these were poor people, couldn't read or write. All they wanted was a piece of land to farm, raise a family, and freedom. And they pushed, and there was no law enforcement west of Mississippi, so they couldn't even enact that law. So the conflict was inevitable, but it's not a black and white situation. So it was nobility on both sides, Native American and white. But certainly the U.S. government hosed the Indians, there's no doubt about it, and we tell you how that was done.
Well, it's extraordinary to me how little most young people today know about our history. But even I'm not much younger than you, but I know that already the negative narrative, the blame America first narrative, the America is bad narrative, had taken a hold in the 60s and 70s, and we've never looked back. And that's, of course, why it's so vital, I mean, urgent, beyond urgent, to teach this history today. So I'm thrilled that, you know, the free market sometimes steps in where government fails. If the government schools aren't teaching it, folks like you, you know, you make a name for yourself. Look, Bill, you're a trusted voice in America, which is why I am so happy that you're writing these books. And frankly, I had no idea that they were as successful as you've just said. That is just stunning. So I assume you plan to continue the series.
We have another book, the 10th in the series. Right now there are 17 million copies of my books in print. And then we'll see after that. But Killing Crazy Horse, my publisher has been with me from the beginning, says it's the best book. I don't know. They're all like my kids, Eric. I can't pick one from the next and say one's better than the other. But I know that the enormous volume of sales, 150,000 the first 5 days. I mean, that's, and Trump isn't even in the book. I tried to get him in, but I can't, like, couldn't get him in the book. I mean, it was, but that's an enormous, in this day and age, sale volume. And it's because Americans do want to know the truth about their country, both good and bad. They don't want the country demonized. They want to be armed with facts, and that's what we do.
I suggest for your next book, how about Killing Me Softly with His Song? It just popped into my head. Would you at least consider it?
Roberta Flack will sue me if I do that.
Yes. Okay. Well, the negative narrative that we keep hearing about America, I mean, you and I both know that the Democratic Party has gone crazy. I think Trump drove them to it, and they are just at lightning speed going leftward, unable to control their own people. What do you think is happening in the mind of somebody like a Nancy Pelosi? Because she may have harbored some of these thoughts about America over the decades, but to see that part of the party take control of the entire party, what do you suppose is going through the mind of an old hand like Nancy Pelosi?
Well, I've known the speaker for a while, and my opinion, I could be wrong, is that she doesn't believe in anything. She has no belief system. She wants power. She has power. She wants to keep her power. I think that is true for politicians on both sides of the aisle. Not all of them, but many of them. They don't have any belief system whatsoever. I mean, certainly Joe Biden doesn't have any, because he's basically contradicted himself in his votes. Yeah. On just about every issue, including abortion, which is pretty tough to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you either believe in life or you don't. But anyway, the far left has made tremendous inroads in America because the media, which once opposed it, does not any longer, enables it and sometimes encourages it. So therefore, you can have a political convention by the Democrats that doesn't even mention the rioting and looting and violence in the streets of America. It doesn't even mention it. That's incomprehensible. And in the past, you would have a press going, what's wrong with you, Democratic Party? What's wrong with you? This is a huge issue that affects every American, and you don't even mention it. But the game plan is that the Democrats and the liberal cadre believe there are so many angry Americans on their side, on the left, because they hate Trump, or they don't have enough money, or they don't, or they're not educated, or whatever it may be, that they can mobilize those votes by taking an extreme position that America is bad, which essentially is what the Democratic Party has done. Now, Biden won't do that. He won't. But he'll, if he's elected, he will do as he is told, in my opinion. So, I mean, I don't think it's a Trump versus Biden election. I think the Americans are voting for what kind of country do you want? The Democratic Party has been pretty upfront about their disenchantment with traditional America. They believe we're a white supremacist nation or some other nonsense. And they're going to hoist that on everybody if they get power. So that's what you're voting for, not really a man here. It's a very unusual election.
That I was going to say, I say he's a one-man Potemkin village. I mean, he's a cardboard cutout, and we have no idea what would happen if he were elected. Honestly, I think no one can say who would really be governing the country. Would it be Kamala Harris? Probably it would be a cadre of maniacs, and who would just go along with it. That, of course, he's the ultimate, you know, Manchurian candidate. If ever anybody thought Trump was in the pocket of Putin, which is a joke, this is a real case of wondering, would China be governing America? Who would be governing this country?
I don't see it that way. I think that the elements, the disciplined elements of the Obama administration, David Axelrod, other people like that, not maniacs, but very shrewd, calculating leftists, would be calling the shots. Not Harris. Harris doesn't have Joe Biden's confidence. She was just put in there for ethnic and gender purposes. She has no distinctive record in the Senate. She's a due process denier. She could never win anything, as we saw in the Democratic primary. She got her butt kicked. But the elements of the Obama administration, including President Obama himself, would likely be calling the shots in a Biden administration. Now, the Obama administration was not radical left, even if you take into account Obamacare, which was a socialistic program. It wasn't. Obama deported illegal aliens. He attacked ISIS when he could. He wasn't crazy left. Right. All right. But now things have changed. All right. Now, I don't know whether Barack Obama has changed. I don't know. All right. Well, I knew him pretty well. I interviewed him three times. He may have.
Forgive me, Bill. We're gonna go to a quick break and come back with a shorter segment. Folks, don't go away. I'm talking to Bill O'Reilly.
That old wheel is gonna roll around once more when it does. It will even up the score. Don't be weak. As they sow, they will.
Hey there, folks. I'm back talking to Bill O'Reilly. We're talking about the new book, Killing Crazy Horse, The Merciless Indian Wars in America. I want to get into some specifics there with you, Bill. But before that, I want to let you finish your point. You said that Obama, and this is correct, was hardly as radical as some of the forces we see taking over the Democratic Party today, the AOCs and the Ilhan Omars and a number of people who I described as maniacs, genuinely full-on anti-American in their views. I would say Obama had more of that in him than not, but he just was not free at that point to allow that to be expressed.
I think you may be correct, Eric. I mean, I stay away from speculation. When I interviewed President Obama, and I did three times, and you guys should Google it because they're very interesting interviews where I did challenge him on specific topics. I didn't get the sense that he wanted to dismantle traditional America. I did not get that sense. Now, I could be wrong, and he may have changed. Maybe now he feels that, you know, African-Americans are oppressed in a calculated way by American society. I disagree with that. I mean, I'm a white guy, and I have never oppressed anybody at all, much less a minority group or somebody with a skin color different from mine. I have never done that. My parents did not do that. So why are you laying this on me?
Well,
and
it goes
more
than that, doesn't it? I mean, you're an Irishman. Let's not forget how despised and genuinely persecuted the Irish were in this country 100 years ago, 120 years ago. I mean, this is effectively the story of America, is it not?
Yes, and I mean, I can take it further than that, that my ancestors in County Cavan, Ireland, were thrown off their two-acre plot in by the Crown, the British Crown. They were evicted from their land because they couldn't pay the onerous taxes during the famine.
Right.
And two 16-year-old boys had to come over here on a death ship, all right, and landed in Brooklyn with penniless, and their mother had to stay back in Ireland. Their father died. So I started from nothing, and I have very big sympathy for African-Americans and any other Americans who started from nothing. I want them to prosper and pursue happiness equally. However, I'm tired of the Democratic Party, the liberal wing, pointing a finger at me because I'm Caucasian and calling me a racist. And I'm not going to tolerate it anymore. And the book Killing Crazy Horse, if you think that America was forged by white supremacy, by these settlers and wagons going across the plains, all they wanted was a little piece of land. They weren't white supremacists bent on exterminating Native Americans. That's insane. But that's what's being pushed. And that's why I write my books, so you'll understand America for what it really is. But, you know, we're living in a hyper-political age. We're a divided country, no doubt. But I've reached my limit. You know, somebody going to lay that racist label on me, I'm going to come right back at you, and it's going to be vehement.
Well, I'm not as tall as you are, but I'm right where you are in terms of having reached a limit. It is.
Thing. And I think most Americans have had it. And you know what? Here's the irony. The people who hate Trump the most are helping him the most. The radical left that despises everything he does, their exposition of violence, of kneeling at football games, of denigrating the United States helps Donald Trump. If he's reelected, it's because of them. It's because of the radical left. That's what will reelect Donald Trump if it happens.
Well, that's what I find so funny. There's something about the character of Donald Trump. He drives his enemies plumb loco. It happens every time they say things and do things that under any other situation, they would keep those feelings and thoughts in check, but they don't seem to be able to help themselves. And I just find it hilarious, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking at it from that point of view. I'm not a party guy. I know Donald Trump as well as anybody. I wrote a book, The United States of Trump, which is a history book on him. So if you really want to know about the president, you pick that up. But I don't get involved in, I don't cover issues. I don't do any of that. I basically am looking out for the basic American citizen who loves his or her country. That's who I'm looking out for. And what I'm seeing here is a totally corrupt media that is enabling, enhancing, and encouraging the worst elements of our country, the worst, the lowest, traitors. They're being encouraged by this media. So that's got to stop, and I hope it stops in November, because if Trump is reelected, he's not going to change the country dramatically. He'll continue to govern in a traditional way. He'll annoy all of us with his tweets. That's not going to stop, but he's not going to really change things. If Biden wins, everybody's life is going to change for the worse, in my opinion.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think it's frightening, actually, and I think that that's why those of us who have some platform in the media have an obligation to shout from the rooftops and say to every American, pay attention here. This is not just another election. If you don't vote, if you don't take this seriously, you'll be very surprised. If on day one, Biden signs the Equality Act, I mean, churches are going to go out of business. It's a kind of a nightmare. Bill, I don't know if you have another 7 minutes. I wanted to get more into the Killing Crazy Horse book, but that's kind of that's up to you. You're a busy guy.
Yeah, no, I'll hang with you, Eric.
Okay. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to dig into some of the details of Bill O'Reilly's new book, Killing Crazy Horse, The Merciless Indian Wars in America. Don't go away.
Tell her I will wait.
Hi, folks. Trying times. Just know they won't last. Trying times can be hard on our digestive tract. So why not try Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com? Life Change Tea is an herbal blend of tea that helps the digestive tract and the colon cleanse from intruders. For years, people have experienced the benefits from Life Change Tea. And so can you. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And for those of you that want to go a step further, we have non-GMO organic supplements. If you're listening to Eric, you're informed and educated. So how about free shipping? Just go to the checkout, find the coupon code, enter Eric, E-R-I-C, hit apply, and receive free shipping. Again, Eric, in the coupon code, hit apply, free shipping. These historic times will pass. The yuck in your gut will pass also with GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. GetTheTea.com.
Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with My Pillow. You may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are, and I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to mypillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to mypillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you. Hey there, folks. I am talking to Bill O'Reilly. I assume you know who he is. He has been, at least as far as I'm concerned, a hero in the media for a long, long time, shooting straight, which has become extremely rare. Bill, it's always a privilege to talk to you, and it's thrilling to me that you've chosen to write these books. The new book, Killing Crazy Horse, The Merciless Indian Wars in America, is not something which I can pretend to be very familiar. I don't mean the book, but I mean the period of history and what happened. What will we learn in this book, or what are some of the highlights? Because a lot of us, you know, you get the broad strokes, manifest destiny, you know, the Indian removal policy, and we really, it's very hazy. So what are some of the things that you cover here?
Well, the Revolutionary War, obviously, George Washington and the founding fathers, they go over that in public school. Then they jump to the Civil War and Abraham Lincoln and the fight to emancipate the slaves. Okay. And then they go into the 20th century. So what happened between those two wars and William McKinley when he took over and Teddy Roosevelt? Nobody knows.
Right.
Because it's too complicated. And the public school system is so afraid of offending anyone that they go, well, we're not going to really talk about this. So what happened was, beginning in 1813, the Creek Nation rose up in northern Florida and attacked Fort Mims in southern Alabama and wiped out 300 people, mostly wiped some slaves. That started a 77-year war between the government in Washington and Native American tribes. The first battle was an Indian victory. The Creeks overwhelmed the whites in the fort. And then Andrew Jackson was sent down from Tennessee with two bullets in his body because of duels and craziness, and he defeated the Creeks. That's where we start. And then it just pushed westward, all right, because that's where the white people were going, to try to get a piece of land and have a life. And Tecumseh, he saw it. All right, so he's up in Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, that area, and he's trying to unite all the Native American tribes, and he can't. He fails because there are so many of them, and their cultures were different, their language was different, their hostility level was different. Some were peaceable, some were not. So Tecumseh gets killed in the Battle of Tippecanoe. William Henry Harrison beats him, and then the expansion continues. Now, there's a law signed by Congress. You can't settle west of the Mississippi if you're a white man. Okay, nobody obeyed the law because there was no law west of the Mississippi. Nobody was there. And so whites pushed on. And the Native American, what is this? We have been here for hundreds of years. You're coming into our ancestral lands. You're killing our animals. You're setting up forts and homesteads, and wait a minute. And so the Indians struck back. And then when they struck back, the government in Washington, under a variety of presidents, Monroe all the way to Grover Cleveland, okay, had to protect the white settlers, and they sent soldiers. And therefore, there was battle after battle after battle after battle. So we get into Cochise, we get into Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, Chief Joseph, all the big Native American leaders, and how they handled this incursion and these battles. And it's just unbelievably fascinating. And once you finish the book, you will know how your country was forged from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco. You know, Eric, I did a riff on BillO'Reilly.com, is where I do my nightly newscast. And I said, what is this San Francisco 49ers deal? Why hasn't 49ers been canceled?
Right.
I mean, the Washington Redskins, no, they're out. The 49ers were gold prospectors in 1849. They flooded into California, all right, mostly white men, and they decimated the Indian lands and killed a lot of Indians in California. And now we have the San Francisco 49ers? It can't be that. You got to cancel that name. So I suggested the San Francisco football team should call itself the Pelosi's, the San Francisco Pelosi's. All right. And then, of course, they'd need a new logo, right? You have a hair dryer. Put the hair dryer on the side of the helmets. So isn't that make sense? That's what should happen. Now, I write about the 49ers. I'm being facetious, and I write about the 49ers and their conflicts with the Indians in California. And the 49ers, of course, were aided by the governor of California, which wasn't Schwarzenegger yet, somebody before him. But it's a complicated, very, very exciting, on one level, history to see how our country was forged.
Well, I think, you know, as a student of history in my own right, I would say that the more you know about history, the more you understand how complicated it is. In other words, these broad narratives, they only work so far. You know, eventually you realize in my book on William Wilberforce, I realized, my goodness, there were so many people in Parliament who were against George III's policies. We would never dream of that. We think of them as a monolithic, you know, British Empire, united behind the tyrannous George III. And then you realize, no, not at all, that there were many on the other side. And of course, when you're talking about the Indian Wars in this country, it's that much more complicated. But I do think it's important that we dig in and try to understand this, because of course it does give us compassion for both sides. I mean, anybody who doesn't know how some of these Indian tribes horribly tortured the white settlers. I mean, it's really sickening. And, you know, so we can't really just be pro-white or pro-Indian. It's complicated and tragic.
That's right. In fact, the soldiers that were fighting the Indians were ordered to leave one bullet in their chamber if they ran out of ammo to kill themselves, because you do not want to be captured by many Native American tribes, particularly the Comanches, which were the most ferocious in Texas and northern Mexico and Oklahoma. So, yes, you're right. And today we live in a country that disdains history, doesn't want to know facts. They had fake news even back then. The Indian Wars were covered by the Eastern elite newspapers in the 19th century in Boston, New York, Philadelphia. And they demonized the Indians. They're savages. They're this. They're that. Never giving the reason why Native Americans were fighting or how they got hosed by the U.S. government. Never did you read that. And the only cadre that really protested was in New England. A bunch of literary people did, but nobody even heard it. It wasn't like the abolitionist movement. So yeah. It's a complicated deal. Americans, as I said in the beginning of our interview, loyal Americans who love their country should want to know the truth about it.
It kills me that we're out of time. Bill O'Reilly, I'm your biggest fan. I will say thank you on behalf of my audience. Thanks for writing these books. God bless you.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
Carry on, my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Hey, Albin.
Yes, sir. I'm finishing painting the condo here.
You're finishing painting the condo. Your wife, I tell you, She's a real, what did I call her yesterday? Xanthippe, Xanthippe, famous as the wife of Socrates. People need to look her up. She was so unpleasant that she became a type, you know, like a Benedict Arnold. The name stands for a shrewish wife.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Well,
I know that's very sexist, but in Socrates' day, it was just the opposite, and we need to be culturally sensitive.
That's now, great. Listen, by the way, I'm growing another brush here, by the way. That's another brush.
I noticed that if people are able to if you've got a really great radio set, you can see that Albin is growing a goatee.
Yeah.
And if you look very carefully, you can see that I'm not.
Oh.
Hey, but you have to. It's better if you're watching us on YouTube. I just want to tell people what now, if you subscribe to us on YouTube, it's 100% free, no charge. So I would just say, please subscribe to us on our YouTube channel. I wanted to say, Albin, by the way, the Bill O'Reilly was just so great. I love that guy. He really is. He has always been straight down the line. I know there are people that don't like him. They hate him. I listened to him for years. My dad would listen to him faithfully, and he really cares for the working man, and he doesn't give the impression that he is a political partisan. I mean, some people would say that he is, but I think that's because times have changed, and because the Democratic Party, which used to be the party of the working class, ceased to be that. But that's another story. I just honored. I'd love to go to a Met game with him sometime. that would be great. Yeah. Before we forget, Albin, we've got to tell our audience, this is important. Who do we have this week coming up? Because this week is just nuts. Before I go to Greece, we always kind of get in the best guests. I think John MacArthur, right?
Oh, we have John MacArthur tomorrow. It's so funny. I'm trying to look at my other screen here because I have the whole list, the whole rundown. Oh, we have Byron York coming up. Okay. We have
Byron that guy, York. Folks, don't miss that one. Byron York, my friend Molly Hemingway says that Byron York is the best investigative journalist in D.C. He's not part of the swamp. You see him on Fox News pretty often, but he has written a book called Obsession. I think I have a copy here. I do. It's called Obsession: Inside the Washington Establishment's Never-Ending War on Trump. He explains some things in that book which I have never heard before, ever. So it's kind of amazing. We'll have him on this week.
We have
John MacArthur this week. Yeah,
that's right. And Roger Stone at the end of the week. We're trying to get him for Friday.
Roger Stone? I thought he was in jail.
No, he's not. He had some sort of pardon or something I heard about.
All right. Well, if you haven't bought my Donald Builds the Wall book, my Donald Drains the Swamp book, and the new book, it's called Donald and the Fake News, my children need to eat, okay? We're running out of formula, and we're paying New York rents. This is not a joke. We're paying New York rents. Do you understand New York rents? We need you to step up. Actually, I joke. Reality is that I wrote these books so that those of us who see what's happening in the country can have some fun, can have some laughs amidst the insanity. We're out of time. Just make sure you go to mypillow.com and use the code Eric. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Thank you for being people who listen to this program. We appreciate you.